over the summer, I've been really compelled to start thinking about mission. And what does that mean for me and for the life of Grace Church? And I've had a lot of time to read books, which I don't normally manage to finish Christian books, but I have managed to finish a couple this summer, which I'm pleased about. This one I recommend to anybody, which is called The Prodigal God. It's about the prodigal son story, but talking about it from the elder brother's point of view and how his self-righteousness actually alienated him from God. He did everything the father asked of him, but he became self-sufficient. And talk, especially if you've been a Christian for quite a long time, certainly challenged a lot of things within my life and ways I view people. And I would recommend that if you have been a Christian for a longer time, that that is well worth a read and may change your thinking somewhat. If you want that copy itself, please ask me afterwards and you can take that away. That's fine. There's that one. There's this one. Another book. This is what I'm going to do for the next 20 minutes. Outlive Your Life by a guy called Max Licardo. He, very short chapters, but talking about getting the most out of your life for God. And a lot of challenging things in there that could change the way you think. So then Paul said, you've got this week to speak. And I said, I'm going to need a few more weeks than this to talk about mission. Because as I started to look at it, I was thinking, you've got mission at home, you've got workplace, you've got your community, and then you've got your personal response to it as well. So what I'm going to start is a bit of an overview and really bring it back to the personal level. I want us to forget Grace Church at the moment in terms of the wider church and think about ourselves. And the first question is, have we got a mission mentality? Now, do we live in the reality that God is coming back soon? We don't know when that is or when that may be, but Jesus may well come back tomorrow. What would you do if you actually knew he was coming back tomorrow? And how would that change our mindsets? We'll briefly look at the disciples, how they live with that reality. And I'm also looking at the question of the church as well as a whole. Are we a church that is on a mission? Or a church that does missions along the way? And there is a subtle difference, and the wording may not be up to scratch, but hopefully I'll explain that. What do I mean by that? I mean, are we a church that is constantly taking the gospel to new ground and asking God, where can you send me next? Is it the workplace? Is it school? Is it my neighbours? But are we constantly living in the reality of that, or are we people that look for the next Alpha course as our target, or we look for the next barbecue, but we have to party as our target, and hopefully we'll see a bit where they fit in as well. Because it's more than that. Living with a mission mentality is a lifestyle. So I was obviously thought mission impossible. When you're given a mission, you choose whether to accept or not. And at the end of the mission, there's a definitive end. So if we look at, first of all, Matthew 28, this would be the base of what we'll be looking at today. And you can probably guess that is the Great Commission. And just two verses. Verse 19. It says, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you. And behold, as a bonus, I am with you always to the end of the age. So it's an encouragement there. We don't go alone. But the base is there, go. The key word is go. It's not sit and wait. Is go, and this is a challenge to us now. Are we people that go, or are we people that are content? I think with our lifestyle, I've been particularly challenged with, am I content? Am I happy where I am at the moment? I've got three lovely kids, middle kid challenging at the moment, but they are lovely nonetheless. Challenging wife. Lovely wife. But you sit there thinking, am I happy in this? Is this all there is? Because if it is, I don't really want to be part of this Christianity life. And that's why I come back to you every now and again. I think, God, if you're real, there's got to be more than just everyday mundane life. Because your Bible is full of it, and I've seen you work in my life and through others to see more. So how do we get motivated? So the Great Commission, has it finished, is the first question. When a mission ends, it's ended. Has that commission finished? No, it hasn't. This is for us now. How long will it last then? How long are we committing ourselves to this mission? That is forever, till we die, because that's what Jesus said. This is what he's commanded us to, go and make disciples. And a saying that my mum often put into me is, they're packed and ready to stay. So their mentality is very much more, we've got our bags by the door ready to go when God says go, but I'm going to stay and serve here until God says go. And it's a different mentality to, I'm just going to get myself comfortable. It's very dangerous when you get into that comfortable state of, actually, I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to get comfortable. I'm going to build my life here. I'm going to serve people here. And then when God says go, you think, I can't actually hear that because I'm comfortable here now. And actually, if you've got your mentality of, I'm ready to go, God, when you say, but everything I do goes into now, it's a different mindset, and it's a mission mindset that God is asking us to have and challenging us to have. One of my friends is decided they're going to plant into Liverpool and do a church plant over there, and I came home to Sal and said, Liverpool? And she said, no way am I moving yet, not a chance. And so I assume that was God speaking to me quite clearly. But I'm my wife. And I said, okay, well, but it just provoked me to think, when we hear things where God is saying, I want to go and do a new thing, I'm looking at you guys, Japan. If God said to me, Japan, how quickly would I say yes? Or how quickly would I go, that definitely isn't God. That's too far. I've got to leave family behind here. Although, mine would probably come with us, but that's a different story. So, there's things like that. What do you think? When you hear church planting going on, do you think, man, I'd like to support that? Do you think, that's not for me? That's not really what I'm doing. Because God is a God that sends. And he wants us to be passionate about people that go. Robin and Hannah. Keeping in touch with them. Praying for them. Supporting them in their move. It's a big thing to do. It's been a big thing for their kids. So how are we passionate about that? And it's something God's been stirring it up in me. But a little analogy for you is changing the tone. Sally has asked me to go to the shops. Okay, she said, can you buy some bread and some milk? She sends me out. This has probably happened numerous occasions. And I think it's probably more of a man thing than a woman thing. But I get in the shop, and for some reason, milk and bread, I think, DVD. So I go to the DVD rack, I think, I love my films. Some of the other, that looks good. And I think, I'll get the kids a Spider-Man magazine. So I go and get Spider-Man. And I look around thinking, I like this cereal. I like these crisps. And before long, I've got a trolley full of stuff that I never came in for. You get to the cash out, you pay, you walk out, you get home. And Sal looks disgusted at wasting money like that. And then going, have you got the bread and milk? And I go, I'll be right back. But the analogy of that is, the bread, the milk were the key things. And when we talk about our Christian lives, the bread of life is Jesus. His commandment is to go and make disciples. Therefore, all of church life can be a distraction. It's good things and bad things. Because the mission is, go. Go and make disciples. We need to be in the community. So with that analogy, I want us to think, the bread. We've got to get hold of the bread again and come back to the bread. That is Jesus. What does he want us to do? Where does he want us to go? Because he forgives us. And there's a passion that comes with that forgiveness. We've seen it on the cross when he stands there. Or he's nailed there. His arms are out. He says, Father, forgive them. And there's a passion and a cry in that voice that is true. It's from a heartfelt thing. And then he says, it is finished. And we have accepted the goodness of that. If we believe the reality of that, why would we keep that to ourselves and not want to tell as many people as we can? And there's a compassion with Jesus. Do we believe Jesus can heal? I do. I know he can. He's healed me. Can he forgive? Yes, he's forgiven me. Can he save? He has saved me. Can he love me? I know his love. Therefore, if I live with that in everyday life, whether it be in church or out of church, my lifestyle will not change because I'm driven by a compassion and a passion for a man called Jesus that can serve anybody's situation. Therefore, am I on a mission? I shouldn't have to make myself do something. This is the key. It comes from the heart. If I think I've got to make myself say this, it's a robotic thing. And that's not what God's after. Jesus is after a love affair. If you go to someone that is hurting and you know Jesus can save them and help them, and I'm not talking about becoming a Christian, I'm talking about saving them from their hurt, you can talk to that person with a passion and a sincerity that will change lives. If you say, I read somewhere that something can make that better, I'll go and have a look, I'm not really sure, then you lose the passion. And that's not what Jesus is about. He walked the earth, he met with people, he talked with people, and he had a passion for these people. So my question is, and it has been to myself, all of these questions I ask, I've asked myself, if I believe this, which I confess that I do, how does my life reflect that? Okay, so, and I need to ask God for compassion. That's the first main point, is we can't generate it ourselves, but I need to ask God for compassion. And a helpful thing that I read in one of the books was, watch the news, for example, and things that happen miles away I find very hard to relate to because it seems so distant and doesn't affect me. And he said, watch it every night and ask God, give you compassion, until something changes in you that you say, I want to pray for those situations. And it may mean that you go and do something about that. It may mean giving money. It may mean going out there and visiting. It may give your life to serving something out there. It may mean praying every night or once a week for a situation that God has put passion in your heart for. But it's something you have to be involved with. You have to be aware of it. And God says, are you really that interested? And it's a challenge again for me. I need to watch that. And I haven't done it, I'll confess. I haven't started that yet. But I was provoked to think, how much do I think that doesn't affect me? Therefore, I'm not that bothered. And it's a bigger picture. God is a big picture person. And then, as I briefly said already, how Jesus moved. He was very much in compassion. He'd go and meet people. He'd talk with people. And he'd see where they're at, where you're at. Zacchaeus, I'll come to your house for tea. I'll come in. And he met and he sat and he talked. And it's the small talk scenario. And then he said, right, now I can set you free. And we are Jesus to the people around us, whether we like it or not. As soon as they know we are a Christian, what people see in us is how they see Jesus. And that's a massive mandate for us to carry. But by his spirit and by his grace we can do it. And he equips us to do it. And the key word I'll put is sorry is another word that we can be honest. People, I've mentioned the hockey pitch example of losing my rag, becoming slightly over competitive and overzealous and having to say to teammates, I'm sorry about that opposition, I'm sorry about that umpires, I'm sorry about that. And then people go, well, how can you do that? I say, well, because it's not what I do, it's who I know. And that has always been my strategy. If you want me to talk about Christianity, I can talk about Jesus. You see me as I am, and I let him down here, and I say sorry to him, and I'm sorry to you. But actually, there's forgiveness there, and there's a freedom in it. And that's what excites me, because we can move on. And we can go and reach people freely. Now, I'm going to read a bit from this book. Because the next bit is, don't distract each other. So if we're on a mission, we can easily hold each other back. And this story out of this book is quite helpful. So I'm going to read it. In fact, Sally, would you be happy to read some of it? I know it's off the cuff. You've got a better reading voice than me. Just read that page for now.
In 1976, tremors devastated the highlands of Guatemala. Thousands of people were killed and tens of thousands were left homeless. A philanthropist offered a sponsor a relief team from our college. This flyer was posted in our dormitory. Needed. Students willing to use their spring break to build similar block homes in Quetzaltenango, sorry. I applied, was accepted, and began attending the orientation sessions. There were 12 of us in all, mostly ministry students. All of us, it seemed, loved to discuss theology. We were young enough in our faith to believe we knew all the answers. This made for live discussions. We bounced about a career controversies. I can't remember the list. It likely included the usual suspects, charismatic gifts, end times, worship styles, and church strategy. By the time we reached Guatemala, we covered the controversies, revealed our true colours. I discerned the faithful from the infidel, the healthy from the heretic. I knew who was in and who was out. But all of that was soon forgotten. The destruction from the earthquake dwarfed our differences. Entire villages being levelled. Children were wandering through rubble. Long lines of wounded people awaited medical attention.
Okay, I'll just read the next little bit. It says, our opinions seemed suddenly petty. The disaster demanded teamwork. The challenge created a team. The task turned rivals into partners. I remember one fellow in particular. He and I had distinctly different opinions regarding the styles of worship music. I, the open-minded, relevant thinker, favoured contemporary upbeat music. He, the stodgy, closed-minded caveman, preferred hymns and hymnals. Yet, when stacking bricks for houses, guess who worked shoulder to shoulder? As we did, we began to sing together. We sang old songs and new, slow and fast. Only later did the irony of it dawn on me. Our common concern gave us a common song. This was Jesus' plan all along. None of us can do what all of us can do. Remember his commission to the disciples. You, all of you collectively, will be my witnesses. Jesus didn't issue individual assignments. He didn't move one by one down the line and knight each individually. You, Peter, will be my witness. You, John, will be my witness. You, Mary Magdalene, will be my witness. But rather, you, the sum of you, will be my witnesses. Jesus works in community. For that reason, you find no personal pronouns in the earliest description of the church. All the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, and to fellowship, and to sharing in meals, and to prayer. A deep sense of awe came over them all, and the apostles performed many miraculous signs and wonders. And all the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They worshipped together at the temple each day, met in homes for the Lord's Supper and shared their meals with great joy. The cameo contains only plural nouns and pronouns. I'm sorry about this. All the believers devoted themselves. Awe came over them all. All the believers met together and shared everything. They sold their property and possessions. They worshipped together and shared their meals. Not I, or my, or you. We are in this together. We are more than followers of Christ, disciples of Christ. We are parts of his body. He is the head of the body, which is the church. I am not his body. You are not his body. We together are his body. But his body has been known to misbehave. The brain discounts the heart. The hands criticise the knees, the eyes refuse to partner with defeat. Visionary thinkers won't work with steady labourers. A clear case of mutiny on the body. And again, he quotes the scripture. It says, if the foot should say, but I am not a hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, it is therefore not of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body, just as he pleased. Now, that section really sums up what I couldn't say briefly, and it's helpful to think about us as a body in this statement, because you can see how we work together, different functions, different people, but actually you can see how it becomes big, part of a bigger body, and therefore we can be different, we can like different songs. But my prayer is that it's not a disaster that brings us together, to serve together, but actually a common purpose, which is we're here to glorify Jesus in our lifestyles. And it doesn't matter whether that's Bromsgrove, whether we travel, or wherever we go. That is what our end is. That is what our commission is. And there's a quote further on in here which really struck out at me, which says, when workers divide, it is the suffering who suffer most. I thought, as a church, do we care enough about other people to actually make the effort to get on together and to actually resolve conflict? And things like that. What we do here will affect our impact on what we do out there. How much do we love each other? Depends how quick we are to say sorry. How quick we are to actually tell people that upset me and not sit on it and moan and start telling other people about how these things have hurt you. But it's a case of actually, no, I can make this stand because I'm more interested in seeing people know Jesus and the suffering that's going on and be changed by a lifestyle of people that follow Jesus and believe his words, than I am about the fact that somebody said something once to me that I've held on to for 20 years. And although I'm belittling it, when you put it in light of what Jesus has done on the cross, it actually should be a pretty quick choice to say, God, I'm putting that down for you, because I have been in the presence of a man that hung and suffered and died for me. So I said, be quick to forgive. Seek forgiveness from both man and God. It's not just good enough to say to the man, I'm sorry I've upset you. But the reality, God is watching everything. God is with us in all that we do. If we upset him, we say sorry. It's taken from us. That's good. It's encouraging, but let's be quick to do both, not one or the other. And the other more challenging thing that I find quite hard to take is actually I could be the person that is holding somebody else back because of my actions towards somebody else. And for me to go to that person and say, I'm sorry, I have made you feel useless, I've said something that has put you down, and I'll use a hockey analogy just because it's easy to say. To say to somebody, you're rubbish, you shouldn't be playing in this team. Everybody else hears, you're quite influential, and they all have a go at that person. Then what that person feels like, you can't play the game, they walk away and they feel totally alienated. In the church, it works exactly the same. We think words, what's the old saying, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That is rubbish. Words hurt. Words affect, words live with people longer than a broken bone. Once that's healed, you can move on. But words can get in here, affect hearts and lives and hold people back. Don't be the person that does that with somebody else. Let's be real about this. The reality is you could be doing that. I could be doing that to people. when I have a quick word with Sal and say something that I don't mean, maybe it's about parenting or something, say, yeah, well, you've done that rubbish with Josh, you're no good at looking after him, dealing with him. What's she going to think then? That reinforces the thought that she was already thinking, and I've just made her think, well, it's right, where can I go there? I walk off, I never give that a second thought. But I actually need to go back, and you probably need to say a good thing 25 times for every one bad thing you say to actually get over that. I need to say, I'm sorry I said that, so I didn't mean that. Well, why did you say it? Because I was being an idiot, and I was out of the will of God, and I'm sorry to you, I'm sorry to God. You are a good mother to Josh, and you say things, and you have to do it. You have to do it, otherwise that will live with her. I don't want that to hold her back from A, a relationship with Josh, and B, a relationship with God, thinking this is a weakness. And it's the same with Jesus. If you think somebody that reads their Bible more are closer to God than you are, because they read their Bible more, and they walk around waving their Bible more, going, I know this. Do you know that bit in there, and you're sat there going, I ain't got a clue where that is. But they make you feel like you should know. I've been in that position millions of times. That's where my paraphrasing normally comes in. There's something about Jesus. But you do, straight away you think, and you're on the back foot. But it can, that kind of thing can make people think, I can't ever understand the Bible because I don't know it as well as somebody else. And Robin, when we were away, it was good to catch up with him at New Day, said, why do you use that version of the Bible? Because this is quite a wordy one. And I said, well, that's mainly because it's the one I read and I study with. But he said, well, why do you have to use that? Use one that is clearer. If you think, if you can't understand it, why use it? To illustrate a point, obviously the interpretation has to be biblical and you can use that to refer to, but the point is, why do we try and make things sound clever and then alienate people because of a result of that? It's not. Are you putting others first in doing that? I'm using it today as it happens, but there you go. But if we go back to the mission then, it is go. But we can actually hold people back. And we've had a lot of teaching over that kind of thing, and talking about Jesus. Really, I just wanted to talk about the cross, because that's what I love talking about. But actually, there's more to it this time, to build on that, because I've done that a few times. Other people have done that. And every week, we should come back to the cross. If we're teaching what the Bible says, every part of that Bible will lead back to Jesus, what he did on the cross, and his relationship with us. So it should be inbuilt. So the mission. We're back on the mission. We'll go. Don't hold other people back. Think about what you say. Be quick to say sorry to each other. I want you to imagine a scenario where we're all on a train, and this is all there is, us, the last, the chosen few, and we're on a train, and we suddenly get wind of, in an hour, we're going to hit hell, and everybody on the train is going to end up in hell, bar us. Now, at that point, you'd have to be pretty hard-hearted, A, to not listen, and B, to say no to God, but actually, I would like to think, I would be more inclined to think, I've got to get people off this train, they don't even know this. And so you're running through, and there's loads and loads of carry. You're running through, telling people, tap on the shoulder, can I interrupt you? Oi, you, oi, did you know? And there'd be panic. There would be a sense of panic, because you know you've got an hour, or these guys are going to spend eternity without Jesus. There's another story and sermon in that, or preach, or teaching in that, as to eternity, and what our expectations are and reality of that. But if that is what we live with, there won't be a gentle, excuse me, can I sit here, would you mind? I haven't got the time to spend with that one person when there's hundreds, thousands of people on this train that I've got to get to. So you'd be spreading out, and hopefully we'd all be said, just grab them, chuck them off, and you know that you can get to the point of, we've got 20 minutes, and I would be lifting people off and throwing them off that train, saying, don't go on this train. And there would be a real urgency about me, because I know the reality of what's going to happen in 20 minutes. Now the disciples caught something of that, because they realised Jesus might be coming back soon. And this is a challenge. When you're with people, it may be one-off. There may be one moment that you have that is an opportunity to speak to that person's life and change their destiny forever. But often we can walk by, and I've done it many times, walk by and say, I won't bother today. And that one action could change the destiny of that man's life. Now, I believe God has everything in his hand, but I actually know he wants us to be a part of that. And as a church moving forward, if it is not effective, we have to ask the question why, and we have to get our hearts back to the passion of God. He wouldn't have walked past people saying, Jesus, going, no, I'm not bothered. Not bothered. Someone held on to him, didn't he? Say, I'm ill. And he felt the power go from him. And he didn't walk off thinking, job done, did he? He turned, and he spoke to that person. This is the people that we are. When we talk about being like Jesus, it is a time-consuming job because we will be stopping a lot to talk to people. And it's a difficult job. And you can make up all sorts of excuses why you can't do that. But actually, this is what we're called to do. And work is, again, another sort of session, but that is a place where it's difficult. You haven't got time. You have to sort of put little pearls of wisdom there when you can. You know, the Holy Spirit comes quickly and does it in those moments. But actually, in a lifestyle, walking down the street, in another book I read, it said, slow your life down. When you go to the shop, pick the longest queue and stand there and talk to people. Slow yourself down. We're in a rush generation that hasn't got time. It's time for the church to make time to meet people, to talk to people. So then there's an urgency about the reality of who Jesus is, what he's done. I had a story of when I was on a bus once coming back from Andover, a place down south going back to Salisbury, and I was just looking out the window, it's quite hilly, and all the hills went flat. I went, Ross! And I was like, well, sorry, you know, you're crazy man. But I had a sense that God had shown me this is the end. And I thought, well, I haven't told my friend about Jesus, and it's such an impact on me that I shouted out, and it was a sense of, that's quite scary. But then you soon get back into, well, it's not going to happen tomorrow. But actually, reality is, if I say to you, Jesus is coming back tomorrow, what is your priority? And sadly, some of us will say, I'll just go and get on with what I'm doing, to be honest. But Jesus said, no, there's more than that. I can think of my uncle, I'd love to go to London now, one more chat with him and say, will you listen to this, please? My uncle hadn't spoke to the family, I'd go and see him and say, look, I just want one chance of reconciling this, and I might not get it. But that's just two things that suddenly pop into my mind, let alone the neighbours and the friends we've had and all those thinking, who am I to say, I'm going to heaven, forget you lot, I'm not bothered. Because that's not the Jesus that I serve, or the Jesus that actually chose me and took me and said, I'm giving you life. Give it to others. Show others what that is. Disciples live like Jesus' return was imminent. So in summing that up, where do we start? Because it's a massive challenge. That's why I'm doing this. I'm saying to Paul, I don't know how I'm going to fit this into one session. Because there's so much that God's challenging me on. And has my lifestyle changed? It's easy in my holidays. I'll go back to work tomorrow and everything gets busy again. Then we'll see. Has God affected me here? And if he hasn't, I'll be back before him saying, I need you to make me compassionate. I need you to speak to me regularly. So where do we start? Okay. In Envision 2007, there was a prophetic word brought to Grace Church at the time, and it said, and our food and enjoyment together will see many people come into the kingdom. Now, from our point of view, Sally and mine, this has been a massive paradigm shift, if you like, from where we were at our old church, which was totally meeting focused. We had to be at everything. We led a small group and you had two meetings of that and you had to do the prayer meeting every Sunday night. We had to bring a word every Sunday morning. Otherwise they would say, well, what's going on there? You know, you should be hearing for God come with some. And there was a real sense of expectation that beyond church, we had no time for people outside of church because we were living all insular with the people in church. Now I played football anyway, but so I made friends outside of church, but we can get very much like that. But our friends, actually, by just including them, and that's what I think Grace is very good at, and taking a step back, seeing we are very good at actually being friends to people in our community. And it doesn't actually matter whether it's church or not church. There's an overlap there that is natural. I think coming from something that has been different to that, I've really noticed that. And my inclination is probably to be more out there and say, well, we've got to be out there more. But you bring the two together and you've got a church that is working together and the reality of it. So, the things that have affected our friends or thought were good is when we've had children, the food rotors come up. And like I said, with Charlotte or one of them, I think we got about 2 weeks out of it, which is great. So, try and get more if you can, if you're in that position. That's your challenge. But they said, well, they're making you meals. Why are they doing that? I said, because they love one another. It's part of what we do, to serve one another. The summer barbecue, which is becoming the autumn barbecue, is another thing. They love coming. It's a good thing. They love seeing all the different ages. I think they said again, this weekend, seeing the older young people looking after the younger young people. And that kind of mix. People look at it and go, that's amazing. How does that happen? But we have to parties, those things. But we need to be in the community as well as bringing them to things. See, that all is to serve us in relationship building, not in actually we're going to get them in and then we do the gospel. You are the gospel to your friends, your neighbours, your towns, this town, other towns, nearby Redditch, wherever we're from. And that is what we bring them to these, to meet, to mix, and that's where that word's been given. Yeah, we've just seen a community group start with me and Sal with two of our old neighbours who became Christians. And now they want to serve and see where that is more. So does it work? Yes. How many years in are we? 7? We've seen 2. But actually the network is growing. And it's getting bigger. So we've got to be in the community. So the challenge is if you don't feel like you're in the community, or you're feeling your whole life is church, then the challenge is actually, Jesus is saying, that's good, but go. And you say, okay, God, where? Where am I going? And that's the first question we can ask. And all these things help provide that. But be confident in eating together and having meals with you. It's okay to just meet and be friends. That's what they want. That's the reality. People want to be accepted and loved and served. But with that, you need an effectiveness with the faith, which is what I'm learning. It's to pick the right times. And in 1 Peter, let's look at this one, verse 3, verse 14 to 16. It says, but even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed. Have no fear of them, nor be troubled, but in your hearts regard Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defence to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet, do it with gentleness and respect, having a good conscience, so that when you are slandered, those who revile your good behaviour in Christ may be put to shame. So what does that mean? In a nutshell, street corner shouting at somebody, telling them how bad they are, is not the second part of that. It's everyone's called to hold an account. If someone says to you, why do you have the faith that you have? You said you should be ready to do that. But you do it in a way that loves the person. That's where the compassion comes in. Not in a hard-hitting, you sinner, you are bad, you're horrible, do you realise I'm better than you? Because we're not. But it's in a case of actually, we come together and say, I believe this because Jesus has shown me who he is. And you talk about Jesus, and you introduce them to Jesus. And then the simple maths I put beyond that is the more people you're around, the more opportunities you get. So it's pretty simple in that terms. Rule of maths, more people you see, the more opportunities you may have, the more hurting people you may meet. And then the last bit I put is Acts 4, verse 13, which challenged me again, as the Bible does tend to. It says, now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were uneducated common men, which I affiliate with, they were astonished and they recognised that they'd been with Jesus. When people meet you, who do they recognise you've been with? When people meet me, do they think I'm different? Can they see there is something different? And it doesn't actually mean you're a better person. It just means there's something about you that is like Jesus. If you're spending time with him, you can't fail to become more like him. And it becomes a life, this is what it says, it's a lifestyle. It's not events, it's not things like this, it's a lifestyle. There's a quick saying, it says, do what you love and change the world while you do it. So if you're not involved in community stuff, then think of something you like doing, go and get involved with that. Go and do it, and just take Jesus with you. You are Jesus to those people. You are Jesus in the checkouts of Sainsbury's or wherever you shop. That's what it's about, going out there and doing it. And the last thing is Grace Church scattered. I don't like that phrase. I'd like to change it, and hopefully we will. To Grace Church sent. Because it was never meant to be a week off mentality, which is what I have. And I admit that when I think, oh, it's not on this week, that's a week off. It was meant to be freeing up time so that you could go and meet with people that don't yet know Jesus. And whether that is an evening in the week so that you've got the Sunday to actually have that time back, or whether it is on the Sunday to go out for the day with friends, that was the mission behind it. So when we've looked at it recently, whether to get rid of it or not, I think it's vital. And with your friend, you can challenge each other and say, what are you doing this week? And it doesn't matter. Sally says, my good get out is I'm going to watch football with Pete. That's one of my mates. And she goes, but you always do that as well, and just being Jesus. But it doesn't matter if it's the same person every time. It's just the point. If you are serving in that way, you're thinking, I've got to be out there doing something. That's the mentality behind the scattered, which putting your mind sent. We're sending each other to go and meet people and take Jesus to people and be Jesus to people. Now, with any mission, there's a choice to accept or not. Paul, if I can ask you just to come up. And Paul's just going to play through a song, really, for a chance for us to respond. And then we'll join in with him at the end. And it is a choice. Because a lifestyle is a choice. I can choose what sort of lifestyle I have. That's what I have. I have that privilege. But I want it one that does honour God in everything that I do. When people look at me, I want them to see Jesus. When I talk to somebody, I want to see the power of Jesus affecting their lives. And all we can do is ask Jesus to do it. As simple as that. So, during this, if you listen, Paul will sing and play, and then we'll join in the chorus.